A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between thinking about photography school and selling your portraits online. It's the difference between giving away those cookies you just made for free and running your cookie empire. A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between having a movie reviewing hobby and a movie reviewing career. Squarespace, because no matter what you're into, a website makes it real. Use offer code THEDIFFERENCE for 30% off select plans. Terms and conditions apply.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Yes, indeed. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Not only is Laura Irish Hansen from the U of M here, but our friend John Trappi, our turf expert, our turf guru. Laura and John, good morning. Great to have you both back.
Good morning, Denny.
Good morning.
Yes, great to have you here. In fact, ever since we mentioned it earlier this morning, texts have been coming in like the last 2 hours or so, expecting your arrival. So if you do have any kind of a lawn or garden question, and again, specifically because John is joining Laura today for our lawn side of things, take advantage of it. Call us, text us, 651-461-9226. Yeah, if you'd like to call, we'd love to hear your voice on the radio, or if it's easier, just to send a text like some folks are doing. Well, here we go. Snow is gone, at least in my yard it is, and a bunch of leaves that I've forgot to, well, I didn't forget, I just didn't get to it last fall, but we will get to it. Is it a good idea, John and Laura, to stay off that yard just yet? No raking.
Yeah, I would avoid trying to do a little bit too much, especially as, things are still thawing out. I think, I don't think you're going to necessarily get that much of a jump on things if you went out and did that. And you could potentially be damaging some things that are greening up, or maybe even some grassy that's germinating. So try to be a little bit patient if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Laura, any other ideas what we can do at this particular point? I know patience is the big word around here as far as gardeners wanting to get things done. But what are you up to these days?
Yeah, so actually after this, I'm going to be seed starting quite a few more. I think I'm starting 500 plants today. It's one of my big days. Well, today and tomorrow. But I actually have to go outside and pull mulch away from some of my spring flowering bulbs because I put leaves on top of them, and it can actually inhibit them from growing really well. So if you did cover up your spring flowering bulbs with pretty thick leaf layer or mulch layer, they'll actually come up a little better if you just gently pull them a little bit away.
Do have a little bit of labor to do today. Well, it's going to be a good way, maybe a bit breezy today, but tomorrow looks really good. I'm looking at a text. Is it a good time to remove, this is one of those that came in early today, is it a good time to remove the burlap covering our boxwoods?
Yeah, you can actually start doing that now. It would be fine to do that. Some people, for those who don't know, the burlap is used mostly to stop sun scald, so pretty much like a winter sunburn. You can think of it that way. But for those of you who are trying to protect from like deer browsing, some people will kind of try to use the burlap for that. There might not be enough other things for the deer to be intrigued by in your garden just yet, so you could hold off a little bit.
Here's our number. It's a phone number. It's also our text number, 651-461-9226. Texter says this: what to do with my Carl Forster grass? Plant seeds healthy, but is really really big with a big bare spot in the middle. Can I clean it up and transplant some of the outer edges in the middle bare spot?
Yeah, that's great. So what happens with a lot of our herbaceous perennials, those are the perennials that most of the above ground growth dies back to the ground every year. Those plants, they just keep getting wider and wider over time. And so the centers are actually, usually they're just struggling for light, nutrients, and they just get a little older. So yeah, just like the caller said, dig that whole Carl Forrester up if you can. Take a sharp shovel or spade, and then just chop it into parts. And you can, with Carl Forrester, you can get sections that are just about 6 to 8 inches in diameter and plant those. So yeah, definitely a great thing to be doing every Carl Forrester. Well, it depends on your soil and site, but usually every 3 to 7 years, you can be doing that.
John, this one might be for you. Texture says, last year we treated for grubs. What's the best ingredient to treat them now?
Well, right now, most grubs in Minnesota that are affecting our lawns are annual grubs that are basically still larvae from last late summer. And then they basically turn into our adult, like Japanese beetles and mast chafers. There's not a whole lot to do with them right now. Now, in some cases, if they're really, really bad infestation, late spring, they can be treated with a curative application, but that's very rare. In most cases, if you know that you've had grubs in the past, or you know, just like in the last immediate year, you can use a preventative grub treatment put down in the early summer months, really any time before July 1. And that is typically good enough for a full year's white grub prevention in the lawn.
All right. Let's grab a couple of phone calls this morning. Tom, first up from Minnetonka. Thank you, Tom. What is your question this morning?
Yeah, I got another boxwood question. I grow Chicagoland green boxwood in pots over the summer and bury them in the winter. I want to keep them in the same pots. I know that they root really easily. Can I cut those roots way back before I repot them?
Yeah, so you can do some what we call strategic root pruning. Ooh, sorry. And so when you do that, just make sure you can actually just go and kind of shear the edges of the pot, because you might see that those roots went to the edge, and then you can just kind of clip those to help encourage those roots to branch out into the new potting mix that you put around it.
All right.
But don't take off more than like a quarter of the roots root mass.
Very good. Thank you, Tom. Ken is checking in from Buffalo this morning. Thank you, Ken. What is your question?
Yes, good morning. For 30-plus years, I've been trimming water sprouts from my pear trees. Every year I'm out there cutting these multiple sprouts that come up. I'm wondering what the issue is with that, or if that's normal.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's totally normal. quite a few tree species, they just get those, and it could be partially the angle of the main limbs that cause those, but really those trees just want to have a lot of limbs, and we do a lot of strategic pruning of those trees that can kind of help, and it actually encourages more water sprout production for some of the cultivars. So nothing you're doing wrong, just keep trimming them out so you have a nice open canopy.
Can I cut my ornamental grasses now?
Yeah, if you are shaping them, you can definitely start doing that. I've already had some of the mine in my own yard and at work. I've seen that they're starting to come up at the base, so just be really careful that you're not cutting too much of the new growth.
Okay. Another listener sent this text is, when is the earliest time this spring to apply fertilizer with crabgrass preventer?
That is a good question. So from a crabgrass pre-emergent or preventer standpoint, you want to put that down really sometime before forsythias start blooming or when soil temperatures reach about 50 degrees. We're still about a week, 2 weeks away from that. So from that perspective, that would be an ideal timing. Now, if you're just applying a crabgrass preventer alone or with the fertilizer, ideally, I would wait just a little bit longer until the grass is growing a little bit more for the fertilizer standpoint, just because we want to make sure that the lawn is actively growing and can take up that fertilizer that we're applying.
You know, had the question last week, and every so often we get it, John and Laura, and that is about dethatching. Is it ever a good idea? I hear most of your answers that lawns around here really don't need it, but what is it and is it necessary?
So dethatching, most turf grasses that we have growing in our lawns will create some thatch, but not an excessive amount to where it's actually a problem and it needs to be removed or thinned out. A lot of times, if that is the case, it's in really high maintenance situations with higher fertility rates and it's well irrigated. When thatch gets to be about 3/4 of an inch or more, that's when it probably needs to be managed, where it starts causing maintenance issues or issues with the, health issues for the lawn. Anything less than that is actually healthy for your lawn. It's healthy for the soil. Having dethatching sometimes is used to, people think that there's some benefit to it. It really just helps your lawn green up a little bit faster. But otherwise, there's not a whole lot of need for people to be doing that. And we just recommend just trying to be patient.
All right. Very good. Laura and John, hang on. We'll take this quick break. Be right back on the other side with more of our Smart Garden Show. You can call us or text us with your lawn or garden question at 651-461-9226. From Newstalk 830, this is WCCO. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show on this final Saturday of the month of March. Denny Long here, along with Laura Irish Hansen and John Traffy from the U of M. Any kind of a lawn or garden question, this is your day. This is your hour. Call us or text us, 651-461-9226. All right, bunch of text messages, you guys. Tulips have sprouted in dense bunches, texter writes. Can they be divided?
Yeah, you can do that, but you don't actually need to do that for the tulips, as long as you are watering and fertilizing and leaving them the leaves up throughout, particularly early to midsummer. They'll be just fine. So yes, you can do that, or you can just leave them alone and let them mass a little larger.
All right. This listener wants to know, is it too early for lawn services to start fertilizing?
Yeah, typically, presumably they're going to be using something that's a little bit more of a slow release nitrogen source. It's probably not too early technically. And as I mentioned with the previous call, sometimes they're using a slow release fertilizer source with the crabgrass preventer or pre-emergent. So it's not typically too early if you're using some kind of a coated urea or slow release source, but if you are using more of a quick release, I would hold off a little bit just because the grass is not going to be able to take up as much of that nitrogen as it could. So I'd hold off.
All right, very good. Again, our number is phone number and text number, same number, 651-461-9226. Back to the phones we go. Karen calling in from St. Paul this morning. Thank you, Karen. What is your question this morning?
Hi, my question is, I have several well-established Japanese yew shrubs in the front of our house. They've probably been there for 45, 50 years. They're starting to get too tall, and I want to know when I can prune them before the new growth starts.
Yeah, that's a great question. So for most yews, they're an evergreen shrub. You can actually prune them now. It's a perfect time to do that. It will promote a lot more little growth to happen, depending on how aggressively you prune them. But that's probably a good thing. It'll help fill in those edges, particularly if you're taking out some medium-sized stems. But yeah, definitely get out there. This weekend's a great weekend to be working on finishing up the late winter pruning.
Okay. This listener writes in via text, is it too early to cut old plants if pollinators, are they still in them?
Yeah, that's great. So I'm glad this got brought up. There was a research project that was done, just came out of North Carolina. It was released last year, and it was talking about it showed that for first year growth on a lot of our herbaceous plants that we leave up for those stem nesting bees and pollinators, they didn't actually find them in unwounded stems. So stems that were just left upright, they were finding those mostly in stems that had already been cut back to 1 to 2 feet from the ground, which was really interesting, or older stems that have just natural damage and breakdown. So if you are cutting back, this is all to say, if you are going to kind of tidy up your garden, you can just leave those, leave a 1 to 2 feet of that stem material in the ground, and then you can also just pile up any of those extra stems. So just keep them somewhere, you know, maybe out of sight if you live in an area where people don't want to see stick piles or brush piles. But you can leave them there until the stem nesting insects emerge. A lot of them are not going to be emerging until it's about 50 degrees at night. So even though we're having 50, 60, 70 degree days, the nighttime temperatures are still a little cool for a lot of those pollinators.
We'll get back to the text screen in just a moment, but Gary in Longville just checked in via the phone. Gary, thank you. What is your question for Laura and John this morning?
It's kind of a two-part. What's the benefits or down of fertilizing lawn with Milorganite? I also understand that repels deer and rabbit. How is it versus the commercial weed and feed? I know it doesn't hurt or kill the weeds, but... And then the other part, how long do you wait before seeding lawn, or do you do it before fertilizing?
Yeah, so the Milorganite is actually a biosolid-based fertilizer product from Milwaukee's water treatment plant. So that's where some of that kind of deer or animal repellency thought comes from. So it does contain, because it is a biosolid or manure-based product, it does contain phosphorus. And it is restricted for use in Minnesota. It and other phosphorus-containing fertilizers are restricted for use on lawns in Minnesota unless you're establishing a new lawn or you have a soil test showing a phosphorus deficiency. So most lawns, it cannot be used on in Minnesota because most lawns have high phosphorus. So I would just make sure that you've got a soil test report, showing that you've got a deficiency. And as far as your question about seed versus weed and feed or fertilizing, you can still seed your lawn right now. It might or not, may or may not be a true dormant seeding. I would, if you already have the seed, it's just fine to go out and fertilize at the same time. It's just, the grass seed itself is likely not going to be able to use that fertilizer. So it might actually be a little bit of an advantage if you're planning on seeding to still go ahead and seed that area. Just kind of set that fertilizer application back a couple of weeks to potentially be able to benefit those grass seedlings as they're emerging over the next couple of weeks.
All right. Very good. I'll tell you what let's do. Let's take a quick break. We'll have a look at that forecast. We'll come back. We'll have more of our Smart Garden Show. In fact, I want to talk when we come back. Both Laura and John, you guys are both the big contributors to the Extension website. And for those folks that maybe haven't checked it out yet, maybe we can kind of hear about a couple of things that you both have inaugurated and continue to do there on that great website, great resource. We'll talk about that and the Arboretum and things like that and your questions when we come back from our Smart Garden Show here, News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here. For just joining us, Laura Iwish Hansen and John Trappi from the U of M answering those questions. And before the break, Laura and John, I wanted to mention, for those that had not seen or checked out the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, fantastic resource. And you guys both have done a lot of good work with that. What are some of the things we can find there that you each have contributed to?
Yeah, so there are, I don't remember exactly what they said, there's 12,000 pages in Yard and Garden or something. Website right now. But what I think is really, for me at least, great is we put out a monthly checklist. And it's just six different areas you could be working in your garden and simple things that you can do like pruning certain trees. We'll talk about, okay, now is the time to do this, or now is a good time to think about fertilizing your houseplants, that kind of thing. We also, I We just posted on March 20th an article on donating homegrown produce to local pantries. So for those who are thinking about seed starting or having their own garden, checking out and just looking for best practices when working with local food pantries. So that's something I'm really excited got put out there.
Yeah. And John, what can we find some of the work that you've done there?
Well, I think that there's a lot of really great resources on how and where to buy grass seed, as well as, really one of the more popular pages on all of the Extension webpage is the Lawn Care Calendar. But we also have something that I'm, just like Laura, we have a more lawn care specific. It's a little bit more of a deep dive into lawn care problems with the Lawn Care Newsletter. So just a monthly newsletter where we really are addressing timely issues, throughout the year. And it's something that, I think is pretty well appreciated, and I think it's pretty good content.
Oh, I should say. Check it out if you have not. extension.umn.edu. All right, let's see how many other folks we can help out here before we run out of time. Texter says, what do you do with 50-year-old overgrown lilacs?
Oh, that's a great one. We have a whole webpage on this just for lilacs and pruning. So if you are trying to keep the lilacs and just kind of rejuvenate them, what you can do over a 3-year period is you'll just take a third of those large limbs out every year. So once they're done blooming this spring, you can actually go in, choose about a third of the largest stems and completely remove them to the ground. And then the following spring, after they're done blooming, so in 27, you take half of what's left, so that's a second third, and then in the spring of 28, you'll take out that last third. Now, the reason we do that is because particularly common lilacs, they only bloom on 3-year-old wood. So if you want to continue seeing flowers over while you're cleaning up that hedge or that shrub, that's why we only take a third out at a time. Now, if you just want to take them all down to the ground this year, that's totally fine. Just know you won't have flowers until 28 or 29.
Oh, okay. Listener says, my mom has some asparagus plants that she has not harvested from the last year or two. They have the fern-like growth, and I'm wondering if and how we might be able to harvest some asparagus this season.
Yeah, so asparagus is a really fun early season perennial crop, and you actually want to go out there and harvest the spears every day for a few weeks. So you just go out and you trim them like when you buy them at the grocery store, when they're 8 to 10 inches tall. And then you actually want them. You're going to decrease the amount that you harvest. Usually people start doing that in June. It just depends on where you're at in the state. But you're going to actually let them turn to those fronds, because those fronds are the leaves that are going to be collecting sunlight and energy to put back down underground so that you can have asparagus again the following spring. So you can just go out and harvest, enjoy fresh asparagus this spring, and then just, let those beautiful fronds grow all summer.
All right. This texter lives in a rural area next to some CRP land, had severe vole damage over the winter. Will those tunnels fill in by themselves?
Yeah, generally speaking, yes. I think the biggest issue with vole damage in lawns is really more about if they are creating kind of like almost like a nest above ground where they've kind of made piles of either the clippings or the residue on the surface. That can sometimes smother out plants, and that could be raked up. But most of the time, grasses just recover on their own and just slowly fill in where those above ground tunnels were.
Okay. We talked about grub prevention earlier in the show. This listener wants to know, what's the chemical to use for that?
So there's one active ingredient that we recommend. The active ingredient is called chlorantrinilipril, and I understand that's a very long active ingredient name. But the trade name that you might want to look for is the Scotts GrubX. There's a couple of other manufacturers for it. I'm not familiar with them yet because just this year it's going generic. It's practically non-toxic. It doesn't have a signal word like danger, warning, or caution, and so it's very effective on preventing white grubs. So chlorantraniliprole is the active ingredient. That's like the ibuprofen of Advil. But you'll look for that. Like I said, the Scott's Grub X is the biggest one that's out there.
All right. Very good. Texter wants to know, when can I split my hostas?
Hostas are the greatest because you can really just be aggressive all the time with most hostas. So I like to divide mine in the early growing season. You can do that before the leaves start unfurling or opening all the way up, or the late summer into fall, as long as you're continuing to water them and make sure that they're watered in.
Okay. I don't know about you guys, but this made my day. We joke about this all the time. What can be done now for Creeping Charlie?
There it is. Creeping Charlie can be managed in the springtime, presumably if you're referring in your lawn. So it can be managed. I would look for products containing triclopyr. They're going to be the best on it. Triclopyr plus 2,4-D can also work, but triclopyr is the one that you're looking for. And I would really just start managing it after about the second mowing or so. It's going to start growing really anytime I've seen new ground ivy or Creeping Charlie leaves up in lawns around my neighborhood. So it's already pretty much out there growing, but you just want to make sure that your lawn itself is also having a chance to get up and be growing as well.
All right. This is, speaking of lawns, I have moss growing all over my lawn. How do I get rid of it?
Well, moss, like ground ivy, Creeping Charlie, is what we call an indicator weed. Creeping Charlie and moss are both indicator weeds of excessive shade. Moss also likes shade and moisture. And I would always say, think about why that site is shady and moist. That's how it's able to outcompete turf, because it likes those conditions better than the grass does. So you need to do something about that as well. But there's a product called Quicksilver that's very effective on moss. But if you're not addressing that underlying reason why the moss is there, you're just going to see it again. So think about that. But Quicksilver is a name of a product for moss control in lawns.
Okay. Laura, this texter says, my peonies have been in the same spot for 40-plus years. I want to move them to a new location in the yard. It's a sunny spot. When is a good time?
Yeah, so peonies, we're usually planting them in the fall, late summer and fall. But if you do want to move them after they bloom this year, you can do that. Just make sure that you're not burying them too deep. One of the biggest things that prevents peonies from pushing up flowers from year to year is that they are buried too deep. So, just make sure that you're keeping them about an inch below the soil surface for most people or less, because they're right there. So other thing, make sure that whatever site you're moving them to is not overly shady, too shaded of a spot, or an area where it's pretty wet, because peonies will rot if they're sitting in too much moisture.
Okay. This texter says, we have spring blooming bulbs in the lawn. Will the crocus foliage die back by the first lawn mowing?
Probably not, but you can. The foliage, those leaves are pretty long. They're usually, 6-7 inches long. And if you are mowing a 3-inch mowing height, that still keeps about half of those leaves available to collect that sunlight to then put down into the corm. It's a special type of underground structure to then flower again the next year. So you can mow them, just keep that mower height around 3 inches or more.
This texter says, I gutted out buckthorns from many large areas the last few years. How long does the nitrogen from buckthorn leaves stay in the soil, and should I apply lime? Natural undercover plants are not coming back as yet.
I actually don't know the answer to how long that nitrogen is in the leaf. John, do you have any idea?
I mean, I would assume it would probably be fairly similar to a lot of other plants. A couple of weeks to months is before it's basically turned back into, organic nitrogen in the soil. So I'm not necessarily sure if it's the nitrogen as it is. Maybe just other things are still basically trying to emerge in that area. So I don't have a great answer, unfortunately.
That's a tough plant, isn't it? Boy, what is the best technique? I mean, over the years, I've gotten rid of a lot that used to be in our backyard area. But what is the best technique for making sure it stays gone?
Historically, we've suggested the stump and treat method. So you go down and cut the stems back to 6 inches or less from the ground, and then you spot treat those. And then you might have to go back because they're really they really want to live. They're really yes. good at resprouting if you don't treat them. There is more new research coming out of the university for different control methods that are being used. And so I can't remember what the webpage is called, but if you look up buckthorn on the UMN extension page, you'll see what they're doing there. It's really fun. They're actually doing a lot more on the edge of natural areas where they're seeding more native grasses actually to help shade out and partially outcompete the buckthorn seeds after they've gone and cleared the main stems out.
All right. Stand by, Laura and John. We'll take a quick break. Be back on the other side with more of our Smart Garden Show here on this Saturday morning. Our phone number is also our text number, 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830, of course, this is WCCO. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show. Keep in mind, Andy Lindis will be around next hour talking home improvements, so we can get those questions ready as well. Laura Irish Hansen and John Trappi with us from the U of M on these remaining minutes of the show. A bunch of texts that we'll never get to, and I apologize for that. But let's see how many folks we can help out here. This texter purchased a pot of pre-planted small variety daffodils. Once they fade, is there a chance I can plant them for reblooming next year?
Yeah, so one of the most popular cultivars for those, it's called Tête à Tête. So they're the little cup ones. Those bulbs are forced in coolers to have that cool period, and then they're put in greenhouses to grow those leaves. I have actually Tête à Tête has worked pretty well for me in my own garden. I have very sandy soils. I put them in a very sunny space, and I'd say about 50% of them when I do that do come back the next year. But 50% of those, so about 25% of the original ones I started with, don't bloom that first year that I put them into the garden, because when they're forced, they actually use up a lot of energy. And so, yeah, you can definitely try, transplanting those this spring when the soil warms up a little bit more. Just make sure you're not burying them too deep. That's another issue with those daffodils.
Okay. John, this question came in via text. I had a dead area about 20 by 30 feet in my yard last year. I tilled it up in the spring, put a bunch of grass seed down, but the crabgrass came in very strong, and it was all crabgrass. It's dead now. What can I do this spring? I probably should not have tilled it up.
So, that's a catch-22 sometimes. What I would consider doing is spreading tall fescue grass seed. So tall fescue is one of the more lower input turfgrass species we recommend. It germinates at lower temperatures, and it is pretty quick to establish. So I would consider overseeding just now, and we've actually had some luck dormant seeding tall fescue in pure crabgrass with having in just one growing season have pretty good luck with that. So I would still spread grass seed over it now, but then plan on just assume that you're going to have a lot of crabgrass that emerges. And if you don't mind using herbicides, you can use either mesotrione or quinclorac. We have a webpage on the extension.umn.edu on managing crabgrass and lawns that recommends a couple of these products, but you can control them in late spring or early summer quite effectively, even among those seedling turf as they're also emerging.
All right. Here's one that you get a lot, question, and we do too on the show. Does weed and feed fertilizer prevent grass seed from germinating?
That is a tough answer to say yes or no to without knowing specifically which one, because there are some products that there are some quote unquote weed and feed type products that may affect the grass seed. But in general, no. If they just contain something like 2,4-D, that has very minimal effect on grass seed germination and emergence. If it contains mesotrione, that may affect some species of grass seed as it's emerging. In general, like we always say, we tend to not recommend the weed and feed products because, we recommend a spot treatment approach for treating weeds where they're at and not just assuming you have weeds spread evenly across your whole lawn.
Okay. What can I do, Texter says, with the brown that appeared over winter on the branches of a juniper? Somewhere it suggested applying baking soda to the soil. Does that help?
So I would not do, I would not add baking soda to the soil. It depends on what that brown is on the juniper. It might just be damage from the winter, from either being too dry, because you can actually have those little, we're going to call them the leaves for everyone, they'll actually desiccate and dry out, and so they'll turn brown and then eventually drop off. And that's probably what it is. It's just windburns. You could just prune that out, and then if you think that it's something that the juniper is struggling, you could just make sure you're babying it, make sure you're watering when we have dry periods. It might benefit from fertilizer to help kind of help that regrowth come in. But I would not use baking soda on the soil.
Very, very good. My lawn service, Texter says, includes insect control application for a fee. Is this application necessary for a city lot in Woodbury?
Generally, no. And many lawn services will do that as an add-on. And I would only recommend that if you know that you've had a history with white grubs recently. And white grubs are really the biggest insect pest. There's many that can be, but by far and large, white grubs are the biggest issue. And not every lawn needs to be treated, and certainly not every year. So I think it's really more of an it depends. And if you can't negotiate, then maybe I would consider, I would just consider asking your lawn care company if it's an add-on versus a required service, and then, use that as a decision for, selecting a different or, the same lawn care company.
Lauren, John, we have about a minute to go, and I don't want to forget about the Arboretum, and I know it's a ways off yet. It's the month of April, but Laura, you had mentioned something about birds. Well, tell us briefly about that.
Yeah, there is this, it's an inaugural day. It's called Arboretum Bird Day, and it's for anyone who, from you just want to start getting into birding or, people who have been into birding. There's a keynote speaker, and then there's a whole bunch of classes you can choose from and tours. And I would just check it out. It's on Saturday, April 25th from 6 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. because if you are new to birding, you will learn that some birds are morning birds. So you want to get out early and see them. Check that out. It looks like it's going to be a great day.
And we have a lot of birders around here for sure. And John, let's tell the folks, check out the university website, extension.umn.edu. Great to have you both back on, and I hope we can do this again soon.
Yeah. Thanks for having
us, Denny. Looking forward to it.
All right, very good. John Trappi and Laura Irish Hansen from the University of Minnesota answering those questions today.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
One thing I talk about often during perimenopause and menopause is inflammation, and nutrition can play a major role there. Many women are getting far too many omega-6 fats and not enough omega-3s, but most people have no idea what their ratio actually looks like. That's one reason I personally trust Chronometer. It doesn't just track your food. It gives you detailed nutrient data, including your omega-3 intake and even your omega-3 to 6 ratio. That level of insight can help you become more intentional about the food you're eating every day. Chronometer is accurate, easy to use, and far more comprehensive than many other nutrition apps. I love that I can look beyond calories and really evaluate nutrition quality, including protein, fiber, iron, and healthy fats, especially during this stage of life when nutrition becomes even more important. If you're ready to better understand your nutrition and make more informed choices, download Chronometer for free today at chronometer.com.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.